This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The pandemic has dramatically changed experiences for everyone, including new families. A lot of stories have been shared on what it's like to be expecting or how labor and delivering a baby during a pandemic has changed what experiences parents can share. But what's not at the forefront on people's minds when it comes to new families is how the pandemic is impacting infertility patients and those in the process of adoption. Recently, the American Society of Reproductive Medicine released new guidelines recommending the canceling of treatments and cycles. Many adoptions also remained prolonged with the additional challenge of working around home visits in the age of social distancing. Today marks the start of National Infertility Awareness Week, and I'm joined by Maria Novotny. She's an assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, whose research focuses on communication and infertility. She also runs the organization The Art of Infertility. Novotny says that while the processes for infertility and adoptions are long, expensive, and arduous for people trying to create families, the coronavirus puts even more stressors on people who can already feel isolated in their journeys.
Those going through infertility, I think, are feeling a little bit more anxiety about what their own infertility journey might mean given the pandemic. If you are someone who receives an infertility diagnosis, it can be at first rather disorienting. You know, you're told your whole life that if you want to have a child, you can have a child. And for many of these people who are now coming into these appointments, they had visions of being a mother or a father. And with their diagnosis, that seems kind of impossible to kind of achieve at that moment. And so now, because of the pandemic, many of these treatments and cycles are being canceled. So the American Society of Reproductive Medicine created a task force around the time when the pandemic was first hitting the U.S. To kind of determine how treatments should be regulated, if at all. And since March, there have been two reports that ASRM has put forward. And those reports have basically indicated suggesting to reduce any sort of viral spread and the potential of how that might impact also pregnant mothers, which we of course don't quite know, to suspend treatments that have not yet been conducted. For those who are currently cycling or in the cycle, they're trying to make every effort to figure out essentially how to continue on with that cycle so it doesn't have to be canceled. But it's becoming difficult, and depending upon where you live regionally within the U.S., that can be a challenge as well.
So you reference people who are currently in cycle. For people who are on the outside, perhaps don't know a lot about fertility treatments, it's not something you can necessarily put down and pick right back up again. There's timelines, there's protocols to follow, certain steps to take before you know whether you can even move forward or not. And of course, this also wraps up not just the time investment people and families are putting in, but the financial, physical, and emotional. So what's the span of that for people?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So most fertility treatments are not covered by insurances. And so your common out-of-pocket cost for an IVF treatment can be up to $10,000 out of pocket, which is a lot of money and a lot of savings. Also, I think worth noting, though, is that it's pretty typical for the first treatment, the first IVF cycle, not to work. That's pretty common. And so you're talking maybe $20,000 or $30,000 for a cycle to work. And so it can be really upsetting for individuals' right to have that cycle be postponed. It can also mean perhaps that they won't have the financial ability to reschedule it. If you're thinking about the pandemic and how that's impacting the economy, for those who have had to dip into their life savings to kind of make ends meet, that might be removing that possibility that they can do another cycle. For those who perhaps lost their jobs and then their health insurances, they might not be able to do, again, any sort of cycle or treatment. And so it can be really disheartening at this moment.
And for the women who are already undergoing treatment and perhaps have to stop or postpone when they've already put their bodies through so much, how does this additional stressor of perhaps feeling like you've put yourself through so much, and now once again, your dreams are on hold, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, we like to say in the infertility community that we're really good at waiting, but this is a little bit more agonizing, adding that additional weight. You know, there's been studies by health psychologists like Dr. Ali Domar, who's really well known in the infertility community, that infertility, the stress of that is the equivalent of anyone going through cancer treatment or experiencing and being diagnosed with AIDS. It's extremely stressful. And on top of it, if you think about it, infertility is really an isolating experience. It's a disease that's not really visible, and not everyone knows that you're going through it unless you made the decision to talk about it and make that clear to friends and family members. And so finding that support or having a supportive network around you is really important when you're going through infertility. And I think now, especially with the pandemic, when we're all isolated, figuring out what your online or virtual support can be or look like is essential to kind of coping with that additional stress.
Do you have any recommendations for those online support systems if people were relying on meeting people in the waiting room at these clinics?
Yeah, I mean, so social media is always great, but for infertility, it's also triggering. If you think about, you can have friends who are posting pregnancy announcements, which can be really, really upsetting. So some people in the infertility community have created kind of infertile social media accounts. So that's their safe space, their safe account where they only follow infertile kind of bloggers or people in their own community to kind of safely talk about what it is that they're experiencing if they're not really ready to kind of disclose that to their larger network of people in their lives. Another great type of support that people can find rather easily is going to Resolve, the National Infertility Association's website. They have a variety of virtual support groups. They also have in-person support groups that are available in the Milwaukee area that are also meeting online and virtually. So I suggest that you could reach out and join them. Another option is Resolve also does a lot of advocacy work, which is really great to kind of meet people from around the U.S. Normally, they have an in-person advocacy day in D.C. This year, that's not possible, so they're doing a virtual day on May 20th. So that, again, is another great way to meet people in your state who are invested in that conversation around infertility advocacy, but then also nationwide. It's a great way to kind of see yourself as not alone in that space. Another final thing that I would say is related to my research is if you feel like you just can't talk to people about perhaps what it feels like to have a cycle canceled at this moment, do some reflective writing or think about getting out the paint set or some crayons and coloring, doing some sort of artistic creative expression to kind of allow your body to express what it's feeling can be really useful in terms of coping. And so if you think about it, it can be really difficult to kind of have that conversation with individuals, with your family, with your friends, because it's kind of reliving that whole trauma. But instead, what you could do is send them that letter, send them that piece of creative writing, or send them the piece of art that you perhaps made. That can be a way to kind of let them see what that invisible experience of trauma is like for you on a daily basis.
Now, of course, before social distancing, with your research on communication and infertility and running an arts organization that curates exhibits featuring patient artwork, how would you try to encourage people who are maybe a little intimidated of picking up this practice at home? You know, we're all at home, we're all trying different coping mechanisms to get used to our new schedules, and for people dealing with infertility, even more infertility uncertainties right now, what's a good place to start?
I think a really good place to start is taking a magazine or a piece of newspaper and doing some blackout poetry, honestly. So literally just circling some words that appear on the page and then black out the rest and see what is coming through is one type of method. I think another really easy method is to take photographs, right? Like, we all have a smartphone that we can easily take some decent looking shots. Start documenting. What does this day look like living with infertility? infertility? What does the next day look like? Is there a particular object, right, that you find yourself always carrying around, or a piece of jewelry, perhaps? What is it that you would take to kind of represent your infertility journey on this particular day? So using photographs, I think, is a really easy way. For National Infertility Awareness Week, my organization, The Art of Infertility, we're actually going to be offering a virtual art exhibit where infertility patients from around the U.S. and some from Wisconsin, they've all submitted pieces of art that they've made. And some of them are just photographs, really. One person has a really wonderful image of a bedroom that they turned into an office because that was meant to be the baby's room and no longer could it be the baby's room. So it's really powerful, but it's just a picture of the office. It's nothing really that artistic, right? But the narrative along with it, the story behind it, is what's meaningful. So I encourage people who are feeling like, I'm not sure exactly, right? I'm not a great artist. I don't know how to paint a flower or anything, to kind of go to the website, go to the free virtual gallery, see what other people are making. But also I encourage people to kind of send your friends and family members who maybe aren't going through infertility to see again what that experience is like. We're also offering just some helpful, hurtful tips for people who don't know exactly, again, what to say to people who are going through their infertility.
Right. Another kind of piece of the spectrum with people trying to make families in their own way with what they're capable of doing is adoptions. And adoptions rely on things like traveling and home visits. So how does a pandemic upset adoption processes?
Yeah, it's been pretty difficult. So I built my family through a domestic adoption in Wisconsin, and I've been staying in contact with the agency we worked with outside of Madison, and they've had to kind of rethink the whole process. So especially with domestic adoptions, there's a lot of encouragement and research around the benefits of having an open adoption. And so you're working, the social worker essentially is working with the birth parents and the prospective adoptive parents to form that type of relationship, which can be really difficult now doing that virtually. You also need to go through a home study, any prospective adoptive family, in order to make sure not just the home is safe, but also that the environment that the child is going to be entering is a safe, loving, nurturing environment. And so as a result of that, instead of physically coming into your house, sitting down, kind of understanding what it's like to be in that space, they're having to resort to, I should say, video conferencing, which also causes issues because not everyone has access, right, to great broadband internet. And so they're having to be really creative when they don't have access to that, for example, of like taking photos of the home, doing additional types of narrative documentation to kind of provide that then to the courts ultimately with when they would finally legalize that adoption. Similarly, on the other hand, though, for birth parents, there's a lot of counseling, right, that happens to make sure that birth parents feel secure and confident in their decision to go through with adoption in order for it to be successful. And so, again, they're trying to do more video conferencing, which is also not as easy. Some of these birth parents, right, are living in environments that aren't conducive to, not just in terms of the internet, right, but conducive to having secure personal conversations. Some might be living with the partner, and it might be like issues of potential domestic abuse going on. And so figuring out ways to mitigate and provide essential support is being challenged right now.
With your experience, and that was before the pandemic, what was your general timeline from start to finish? And how do you imagine that timeline is expanded even more for people trying to adopt now?
Yeah, I mean, domestically, I think it depends upon which type of agency. In my case, it took us about 2.5 years from start to finish. So from wait lists through home study to court finalization. Which was actually a pretty smooth process in my case, just given the relationship I had with the birth parent. However, for other people, it's taking a little bit of a longer time. Also, I think the timeline itself, they are trying to make as smooth as possible with the courts and trying to be as flexible as possible. Though I do think that there is sometimes some difficulty with more birth parents reaching out and being willing and open to consider adoption at this point because they're staying at home. And it depends also on their financial ability as well, correct? So there's a lot of factors that are kind of figuring out essentially what their security is.
For people struggling and going through either infertility, road bumps, roadblocks now, or uncertain of whether they will be able to continue on with adoption or looking at an even longer process as we all live in uncertainty, what are your words of wisdom, recommendation, hope?
I would say, like I mentioned, we're really good at waiting. We know that. We've had to be really good at waiting for those going through infertility who identify as being an infertility advocate. And I think we just have to wait a little bit longer, but we also need to advocate for what we need a little bit better. So we need to be able to talk to other people when we're being triggered, speak up and talk about when the isolation's really getting to us, when it's really hurting us, speak up and talk about the financial barriers that we're facing because of the pandemic, especially, and make that clear, not just to our friends and family members, but really to the legislators that can help influence and change how it is that we can access better, equitable fertility care, whether that's fertility treatment or adoption.
Maria Novotny is an assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee whose research focuses on communication and infertility. She also runs the Art of Infertility, an arts organization that curates exhibits featuring patient artwork about recurrent reproductive loss.